Hey everyone, and welcome to this soapbox edition of the Risky Business Podcast. My name's Patrick Gray. This is not an edition of the weekly news show. Scroll back one episode in your podcast feed if you're looking for that. This is a wholly sponsored podcast brought to you by BugCrowd. BugCrowd's CEO, Ashish Gupta, joins us in this edition of the Soapbox. He's been the CEO over there for about 3 years, taking the reins from our friend, Casey Ellis, who at that time moved into the CTO position. This interview with Ashish is long overdue. As you're about to hear, the bug bounty companies have moved on from the day when they just provided the simple service of running bug bounty competitions for their clients. What's emerging is a much more nuanced product mix designed to extract as much usefulness as possible out of the testers registered on their platforms. I'll drop you in here to my conversation with BugCrowd CEO Ashish Gupta. I do hope you enjoy it.
What's pretty cool, Patrick, like now it's been a year and a half. I can't believe it's been so long. But I got a DM where one of our researchers sent me a note saying, thanks for letting me hack on your platform. I made enough money to buy a car. Now, I saw the DM. I saw that the person was from India. That's where I'm from. So I sent a note. Next time I'm in India, I'd love to get together with you. Congratulations. And I'd love to have a cup of tea and a ride in your car, right? And now day one goes by, day two goes by, and I'm going, man, in Twitter land, this is eons. These are leap years, right? I don't hear anything. And I get a message back about the second day where the person says, well, sorry about the delay, sir. As you might not know, I bought the car for my mother who gave everything to me to learn computer science. I'm just in high school, and I got to make enough money to have her now have transportation.
Yeah, that would feel pretty good. Yeah.
That was huge. That was heartwarming. And I can tell you, it's a year and a half. It's as new as yesterday.
But see, something that you've just mentioned there, right, is there's this army of people of sort of moderate skill level who contribute to these platforms. Then there's the handful of really, really talented people who pull hundreds of thousands of dollars a year out of the bug bounty platforms, right? Like, but everybody sort of has this preconceived idea that it's either all people in developing countries who just only know how to find very, very basic XSS vulnerabilities, or, you know, there's only 10 people who use the platforms and they're the ones making the money. The truth is, I mean, it's a hell of a mix. It's a hell of a spectrum, right?
It absolutely is. And the kind of vulnerabilities our crowd is able to find is also a huge mix, right? So not only the people side, but we had somebody who just made north of 100 grand on just one vulnerability. And the thought process behind that was to actually go find a specific code base that allowed for certain cyber currencies to be broken or not broken, right? And I'm trying to keep it as
vague as possible. Yeah.
But it was extremely creative, not only in the way that researcher was able to find that vulnerability, but also extremely creative in the way that they were able to explain how that vulnerability can be used in a nefarious manner if not fixed. And that allowed our customer to make that much more of a prioritized decision to get that thing fixed.
Well, and let's not sugarcoat this next part, though. There is a lot of absolutely terrible reporting that comes through these platforms as well, but that's one of the things that the platform offers, is to filter that stuff out. I mean, that's probably a substantial chunk of BugCrowd's effort is spent doing triage.
It is, and I think it starts even before that, right? Oftentimes people will say that, is it just the specific vulnerability that was submitted? We think about it all the way from activating a researcher and even attracting a researcher to our platform and then training them. So we not only have the ability to train folks on their hard skills, but even their soft skills. How do you do a report? How do you communicate?
How do you not alienate our customers?
How do you then work with our customers who might not completely speak hacker, if you will? The more we can do this through the platform, the more scalable it becomes, right? And that's really the point I was trying to make with this transformational nature of technology when it comes together with human creativity, right?
Yeah.
Technology innovation by itself can't accomplish a lot. But when you add that innovation with human creativity, there's a tremendous ability to deliver scale and speed and solutions from the right talent to the right problem set at that scale and speed.
Now, I think we've just hit on something interesting, right? Because, you know, we've been talking about creativity, varying levels of skill, you know, ability to communicate issues, things like that. It's one of the reasons I don't really see companies like BugCrowd as necessarily being part of the gig economy. When I think gig economy, I think about people risking their lives to deliver food for a pittance, you know, or delivering food and drunk people is the gig economy, or turning around logos on, you know, graphic design platforms for, you know, $200 in 20 minutes. You know, that's where I think, you know, gig economy. Whereas the security stuff, it's just too nuanced to really be described in that way. Even though, I mean, broadly it probably fits, right? But it just doesn't feel to me that BugCrowd fits in there, or its competitors fit into the gig economy bucket per se.
Yeah, I think when you throw in skills, trust, and behavior, it adds up into something.
Well, and creativity. I mean, do you want a creative Uber driver? Probably not.
Maybe if you're trying to catch a plane that you didn't leave enough time to get to.
Maybe it helps.
Think about one of the value adds that I feel is super important on our platform is how do we orchestrate this human grid, right? This human grid of amazing talent that's out there. And what we do is we think about every person in multiple different ways. We think about their creativity from their skills point of view. You know, certain folks are great at doing research on websites, which they might not have the skill to go out and do work on an IoT device. But an IoT device nowadays is connected to a mobile device and websites. And to that end, how can we get a team together to bring that right talent to that right use case? So skills become super important. And at the same time, you start thinking about the trust side of the equation, which is, has this person really been vetted? And obviously we have ID verification and background checks and things on those lines. But there's also this experience set that they build on the platform where they build their trust score. And on top of it, you add the whole idea of behavior, right? Because certain folks work so well with some of our customers that we don't even have to do anything. How can we get that talent, which is skilled and trusted, to get to the level where customers are able to work with them very, very comfortably? That's what will make this overall gravitational shift that's needed. Because frankly, technology is here to stay, right? We are constantly building new code. And somewhere I was just reading, Patrick, you might have the number better than I do, is that people expect 10 to 11 security vulns in every 1,000 lines of code. So at least we've got job security moving forward. The question is, how can we give that 2-second advantage so that our customers, the engineers, have the ability to fix the problems before it's used for nefarious purposes.
So how has the business changed? How has the thinking changed over that time? Now for 40% of its life, you've been the CEO now, 30-40% of its life, you've been the CEO. Like, what's been the biggest change over the last few years? Because initially the idea was simple, right? Set up a prize pool, you know, define the scope, let people go nuts. It's not really, I mean, that's not the entire game anymore, is it?
Yeah, I would say that the underlying principles and the values have been the same, right? Like, we think about bringing the right researcher to the right use case. We then think about how do we make that researcher productive so that the customers get a lot of value. So the whole idea of pay for performance from a bounty side of the house. What's really changed is the number of use cases that we are adding. Right. So Bug Bounty, as you know, is all about creating a incentivized model that gamifies the idea of finding bonds. We then added the vulnerability disclosure program, which allowed us to not have incentives, but still use the internet as a way to help our customers get information like a neighborhood watch on the security profile. And then 2.5 years ago, we launched pen testing, which is crowdsourced pen testing, which has been a huge growth engine for us. We've seen that we addressed a major pain point, which is how do you bring the right skilled person at the right time to enable customers to get their pen test done for whatever reason.
I just think you know, a big part of the reason that people would find, I mean, you're talking about what you call the next generation pen testing, you know, which, I mean, look, that's not a network pen test. That's going to be, you know, application testing and whatever. But I did some research, like, geez, probably about 8 years ago now. I did some research for an Australian company looking into, you know, what beefs CISOs had, basically. Like, I rang them up. I said, what's giving you the basically, yep. was the brief. And, you know, overwhelmingly, they came back and said procurement of testing services was a real pain in the ass. Mostly yep. because, you know, you basically had to do an RFP and then, you know, people would respond and then they might bait and switch the talent, or they can't do it for 6 months. So really, I mean, I think a lot of the success there is going to come down to the point that, you know, to the fact that you can really commission one of these things in 10 minutes with a credit card, right?
That's exactly right. And in addition to that, you can get different kinds of talents on demand, right? So that makes a huge difference. I'll just give you an example. Before I was at BugCrowd, I ran marketing at a company, and we did a pen test. And it took 6 weeks. We were constantly evolving our code and building new things in. Pen test ends, we get a passing grade with flying colors, and a week later we are ahead. Now, the thing is that people don't write code in chunks of 2 or 5 or 6 weeks. You need to be able to get that continuous nature, and that requires a change in the way that service is delivered. And the fact that we can bring not only the right talent, but we can get multiple eyes of it, so you don't need to keep rotating in the traditional world, the pen testing firms, because you're constantly getting new eyes on it, you're getting the right talent. And most importantly, you don't need to even create a scope, because our researchers will go and find things that are most vulnerable based on where the technology leads them to find those things. So as a result, we normally see a 10 to 11x the number of critical bonds on pen tests, on assets that have already been pen tested by other folks, because our researchers bring that creativity to find things on either the linkage points, the APIs, or even areas that the asset might not have been tested in the past. And of course, finding new ways of chaining bonds together to find even more detailed problems.
Now, of course, the modern and hip approach to securing web applications in particular is to move the application of sort of security thinking and security assessment as far left as possible. So ideally, mm-hmm. you want to be shipping secure code so that, organizations such as yourselves can't really unearth anything. Have you observed over the last few years that certain customers have just got better at stopping that stuff going to production in the first place?
Well, there's just a couple other things that you asked about changes, and this is where the moving, shifting left will also make sense. One other change that even in the 3 years I've been here, I've seen is that the acceptance of the crowd, right? You know, we used to have a term here called crowd fear, and people would be like, oh, you're going to bring a hacker to my environment? And now people understand that there's a bad actors out there that are thinking about breaking into companies anyways. So why wouldn't we bring this army of good actors, our crowd, to enable that? And that's enabled us to also shift left, where people are saying, look, even if I haven't GA'd a product, let me get BugCrowd's teams, the crowd, to provide me feedback, because I've got a sprint team already assigned, right, to building the product. Now, just like we're doing QA from a technology and regressive basis, why don't we do it on the security side of the house? So we've got several customers that are using us in that manner, and that enables us to provide that feedback in a timely manner. Look, I'm a World War II buff, and I think General MacArthur's quote, which went something like, the history of failure in war can always be summed up in two words, right? I don't know, Patrick, if you know the words, it's too late. So if we can give that feedback earlier and give that information about what needs to be fixed to the person, which could be the makers, and get that breaker advantage working for them, we can make our digitally connected world that much safer.
So, speaking of what's next, What is next? I mean, you know, Bug Crowd started out with a simple proposition. Now you're doing, you know, pre-GA testing, what you're calling next-gen penetration testing. So what's next? I mean, from a product perspective, from a, you know, philosophical outlook perspective, you know, what's the play here?
Yeah, the play here is to just making this amazingly creative resource that we have in our crowd available to our customers to address different security use cases, right? So we, in addition to next-gen pen tests, we just announced classic pen tests a quarter and a half ago. It's very much based on the idea of a predetermined scope and time so that we can bring the right resources to provide you with that feedback, buy it in the manner that you've bought traditional pen tests.
So that's hang on, you're talking about like network-based pen tests as well,
We got network-based pen tests, M&A pen tests, which are pretty interesting. We just had a customer utilize one of them where, you know, Patrick, as you know, if someone is doing a merger and acquisition, their security team gets called during the due diligence process and they've got like 2 weeks, maybe three, to give a quick assessment on the target's specific security posture. Well, we come in and we help the security team deliver that, which is very exciting.
So it's interesting, right? Like companies like Security Scorecard have tried to, I think that was what they had in mind for their business to a degree when it came to like doing quick assessments of the security posture of organizations. Why would you go, for a Bug Crowd assessment here and not just rely on Security Scorecard data?
I think they are still getting the Security Scorecard information, but when you start thinking about the value that some of our crowd brings in,
that was a trick question, by the way. I would never suggest anyone just rely on Security Scorecard information, but please go on.
Yeah. So when you start thinking about the creativity of our crowd and what is the security team of the acquiring company thinking about? Like, this asset is going to be part of my portfolio of my attack surface. Shouldn't I know what it'll take to secure it? And what's the best way to do it is bring that intelligence of whatever tools that they utilize and add to it the human creativity of the Bug Crowd crowd so that it allows them to get that information in a timely manner. So in addition to the classic pen test, we also announced our attack surface management product. It's a pretty nice way of just fingerprinting the entire attack surface, providing that information not only from a vulnerability point of view, but also from a priority point of view, what different attack surfaces somebody should be addressing in a timely manner. Now, interestingly, we did one of these engagements for a major networking company, and to my surprise, the networking company said, look, we control DDI and it doesn't matter. We'll know everything that's out there for us to be known. So we asked them a question. I said, how many assets do you have? And they said somewhere in the range of 400,000. Our crowd and our tool went out and found close to another 100% more of what they knew. And interestingly, 30% of those had pretty confidential data sitting on it. Now, this was seen as a very successful project because now they had the knowledge and the actionable intelligence on which assets to close. Some of those were shadow IT kind of assets that had been turned on.
And some of them were development resources that people didn't realize were out on the outside.
That's exactly a big
one there. You know, asset discovery is, you know, it's a burgeoning field. There are companies that do it pure play. And of course, yeah, I know you guys have been working on that. I mean, what's your business model there? I mean, do you charge people for that, or is that just comes with, you know, if you roll a bounty program, it's a freebie, or how does that work?
It's exactly the way we think about bounties. So we've got a continuous model for it, which is constantly giving any changes in your asset inventory, if you will. And on top of it, we bring the experts, our recon crowd, that comes in and provides very specific, if you will, capabilities and experience to find which assets should be prioritized as the ones that you go out and fix, either because they haven't had certain vulnerabilities addressed in them or they've been configured in a certain way that makes them too open for nefarious acts. Interestingly,
what's the business model there? Is that like a service that you charge for? You charge like a monthly fee for people to be a part of that, or how does that work?
Yeah, it's an annual subscription with specific reports that are given on a certain frequency agreed to with the customer.
Because that's interesting. I mean, that's now essentially you're offering a, you know, software as a service. That doesn't really, and of course it complements the crowdsource stuff, because if you're spitting out asset lists into, you know, and making the crowd aware of them so that they can then go and test them, I mean, you know, that makes a lot of sense for you. But, you know, that's, you know, you're now a software company as well, right?
We are. And I think what we find is that bringing that crowd working together with our software enables the crowd to be that much more successful and the customer to get that much more insights, which is why we keep investing in the platform. But our model is fundamentally built around the crowd and their success and their ability to find things. So in the asset management side, they're finding specific assets. On the bug bounty side, they're finding specific vulnerabilities.
Mm. So do you see a time when BugCrowd might branch out into non-security crowdsourced functions?
Yeah, it's a great question. And obviously, we think about it all the time. But what we find is that not only do we have a core competency built around security, we also have a crowd and all the business processes and the platform built to enable that security play to be that much more successful for our customers. So
it's kind of a unique workflow, right? It's kind of a unique discipline. It would be difficult to apply the same methodology and company to something like web development or, you know, a database administrator. Like it just doesn't really cross over, does it?
Yeah. On paper, you know, when you talk about it, yeah, meaning can you bring a crowd to help do those other things? The reason we are first a platform company is that we've actually built those workflows to enable our customers' security practices to become that much better. And then how the security team works with the engineering team. So we've got two-way integrations with just about every SDLC tool, largely because we want to ensure that not only what's found is found faster, but it's fixed faster as well. Right. And we'll add capabilities to enable customers to learn. So, for example, we've got remediation advice that we provide on our platform. So that remediation advice is largely driven by our team and our crowd, which is saying this is how they would solve for the problem that was submitted. Now, when you get in situation that kind of feedback, if you're an engineer or a security professional and a customer, with the vulnerability, it enables them to fix things faster. So that's a lot of the investments that we are making to make the information that much more actionable and enable that safeguard of the digital assets at our customers at scale and speed.
There's a lot of content involved. Sorry, I hate to use that word unironically, but content. There's a lot of content involved in a business like this, right? Because, you know, you were talking before about upskilling the researchers on the platform. You know, now talking about, you know, uniform ways of actually reporting remediation advice and things like that. And I imagine you would have spent, quite a bit of time and money developing, content across the board, content for customers, content for researchers.
Absolutely right. And, as you know, I had a little mountain biking accident. So I wouldn't be wearing bow ties anytime soon. But we call this our bow tie model, where we get this great information about our researchers, right? And we consolidate that information with the intelligence of our platform to make it that much more curated and available to customers. So the other side of the bow tie to address many security use cases. So with this platform being the center of both these pieces of information, one, the researcher workflows going towards the customer with the VONs, and then the customers saying, not only is this vulnerability super important, here's what I would pay for it. We get to now analyze all this information and create a 360-degree view that can be aggregated and enabled for all our customers. And that's a huge part of what our value add is through our platform, in addition to what our researchers do every day to find vulnerabilities and different assets all over the place.
It does occur to me, Ashish, though, that we're sitting here talking about, you know, value add and fancy stuff and, you know, training the crowd and doing these types of tests and those types of tests, where I'd imagine that a very substantial chunk of your customers engage you to do the simplest thing in the world, which is also one of the biggest pains in the ass that you could ever sign up for, which is to just do triage, right? I mean, as much as we're talking about fancy stuff, I'm guessing most of your business still is like pretty much, if you want to boil it down, it's outsourced triage because you guys are good at that.
We are tremendously good at that. And the reason we feel super strong about that is that what are customers looking for? They're looking for this contextual intelligence, right? They want to know what's actionable and what's not. And even if there's certain vulnerabilities, not every vulnerability is always fixed right away. You want to start fixing the most important ones, which create the highest risk or the most amount of problems, and then obviously address the others as resources permit.
Yeah, so an email saying, you know, from BugCrowd saying this issue was reported, it's a bad one, you should fix it, versus 600 emails from people saying I can tell what version of web server you're running when bounty. That's probably just, you know, in and of itself, that's probably a service people are going to be interested in paying for. I mean, the question was though, like, what sort of proportion of your, you know, of your revenue is just derived from serving that simple function?
Well, you know, triage and validation is part of everything that we do. Like every one of the
four. So it's hard to break it out in such simple terms.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Like in Bug Bounty, we are not only triage and validating the ones coming in, we are helping customers to determine what they should pay for it. With VDP, we are doing exactly what you just said, 600 emails versus one which says this is the one you should fix. I was talking to one of the former CISOs of Nokia, and he said he'd never put a VDP program together because once he had done it, he was inundated with information, right? With bonds.
We don't have a VDP, but like our website is static. So we use Jekyll to generate a static HTML site. And like some of the bug reports in inverted commas that have come into like to me are actually very funny. It's just like, what are you doing? What are you doing? You know, I mean, if I was a big company, right, that was getting lots and lots of them, I'd happily pay someone to make those emails go away.
Absolutely. And, you know, what was really cool. So I'll stay on the triage point for just a second. Pentest is exactly the same thing. Now, when you've got a cadre of several researchers that are doing a pen test on your asset, you suddenly get a lot of feedback. That needs to be triaged and validated. And similarly with attack surface management, our recon researchers do a tremendous job of finding things that you won't even imagine you had open. You know, one interesting example was somebody did a marketing microsite out in Southeast Asia. The event happened, they forgot to turn it off. Someone else took over that site and was selling illicit products on that site. When we found that out, that was immediately shut down by the customer.
Yeah, it's funny, those little microsites that pop up for a point in time and people forget to decommission them, and they basically sit there and then the flies start to gather. You know what I mean? And it just like, they just sit there and digitally rot as no one patches anything. And as the framework the thing was built on, like a million bugs are disclosed in it, and it just, you know, more and more flies come and the thing just decays and it's all horrible.
That's right. And I think that's the beauty of our model, which is how do we take this great creative insights that I've given and provide that contextual intelligence with the platform, with the technology that we built, so that people don't need to worry about making a decision on speed versus security, because we can give you the feedback in a timely manner. People don't need to get stuck in how should I safeguard my digital asset because I don't have access to the right resources, because we have those crowds and we've curated them. And then how can we ensure that this all fits naturally into the existing processes and the teams and the systems of our customers, which is where we've made a ton of investments into our platform. Think about our platform as a Lego plate on which you can put the right Lego blocks, right? The Lego blocks being Bug Bounty, Next-Gen Pentest, and attack surface management or VDP and other products in the future. The Lego plate also connects through standard APIs into other everyday tools that are used by security teams and engineering teams, so that we can enable those processes to work that much faster, which is why I love the phrase force multiplier in the cybersecurity world.
Well, Ashish Gupta, in this house, the Lego plate is used to build variously towers, bedrooms, and quite often a little house for a toy koala. Ashish Gupta, thank you so much for joining us on this edition of Soapbox to talk through talk through what's going on with Bug Crowd, the vision, the grand vision for the future. It's been a real pleasure to chat to you.
Patrick, thank you for the opportunity. It's always fun talking to you.
That was Ashish Gupta, Chief Executive of Bug Crowd. Big thanks to him for that, and big thanks to Bug Crowd for its support over the years. And that is it for this edition of The Soapbox. I will be back next week with more security news and analysis, but until then, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening.